This piece was brought to you by Whole Foods Market, wholefoodsmarket.com. HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Business. This is a story about food waste and its potential for delicious reuse. This is also a story about the possibilities born of fortuitous friendships. When two people, ignited by the same obscure passions, are thrown together, discovering a fellow traveller in their midst. First and foremost, though, this is a story about Tara Norvell. Equal parts chef and socially minded pioneer, Norvell wants to change the way the American public looks at fresh ingredients. Specifically, she wants to expand the definition of what is considered edible, usable, and delicious. Carrot tops, discarded chicken offcuts, fish bones, and vegetable peel. These are the building blocks of her culinary practice. After studying art in New York and starting her professional life in retail, Norvell decided on a career change in her late 20s. Moving to London courtesy of her mother's Spanish heritage and an EU passport, she enrolled in culinary school. Relishing the challenges endemic to the profession, Norvell soon landed jobs in some of the city's finest restaurants, including a stint at the Italian-leaning Trullo in Islington. There, she found herself immersed in a very different culinary landscape to that of New York. The Epicurean philosophy of Fergus Henderson, chef and part owner of the famed St. John restaurant, had spread across the city's contemporary dining scene. Pleasantly surprised, Norvell realised that for the British, the idea of nose-to-tail eating had become no big deal. Rather than responding with a squeamish grimace, diners had embraced an expanded field of potential delicacies.
London was great. I loved it there. It was very different. The food scene is really strong and growing, and I think I was there at a really good time in terms of the restaurant scene. There was a lot of up-and-coming chefs, and I got to work with a lot of really great chefs. You know, they have a very strong focus of farm-to-table. There's a lot of English influence in the cooking, so it's nose-to-tail, it's a lot of offal, a lot of hearts and livers and tongues and things like that, which it was very new to me, so I was really happy and excited to learn about all these types of food. And wow, like, yeah, you guys are eating the tongues? That's great. And how to make it taste good. And I think a lot of people in this country are so turned off by those ideas of eating feet and tails because they don't know that it tastes great. And then when you learn how to cook it and you learn how to treat the ingredients, you realize you can make anything taste great.
After her stint in London, Norvell returned to New York, where she began as a line cook at April Bloomfield's much-loved West Village eatery, The Spotted Pig. Working under the direction of head chef Ralph Johnson, she absorbed much during her time there. She admits, however, that a part of her felt perpetually out of place. Something in her own emerging food philosophy didn't fit with the demands of the restaurant's day-to-day operation.
At the Spotted Pig, I mean, Ralph was, yeah, he was amazing. He was just really remarkable. I learned so much from him, a lot about line cooking, which is really important in kitchens. But the Spotted Pig is a restaurant that's really driven for volume, and it's a very, very busy restaurant. So, it's, you know, they don't have a very strong focus on philosophy of ingredient. They have a very high standard. They use really good quality things. But in any restaurant, there's still a ton of waste. And this was one of the places where I noticed a lot of waste happening because of the high volume. The more food you're cooking, the more food you're throwing away. I knew my food was great, but I definitely knew that my ethics, my own values were holding me back in that particular kitchen. And I don't think that the other cooks really respected that. I think they just were like, she's not holding her own, you know? And I completely understand that. I think being on the line, if you're frustrated with throwing something away, you're holding the whole line back, you know? So you really have to just be a part of the team and just go with everything. And I was more like, I don't want to replate this. It's perfect. It looks great. I don't want to throw it out. I'm still friends with a lot of the people that I worked with there, a lot of the cooks. I think people that really knew me and they kind of understood and they respected what I believed. And then they see now what I'm doing and they can kind of understand why it didn't work out.
At the urging of friends, Norvell paid a visit to a rogue pizzeria recently established in the then fringe Brooklyn neighborhood of Bushwick. There, she found a delicious lunch, but also stumbled upon a restaurant operating on much the same value system as her own. Norvell was home.
Everybody kept saying, well, Roberta's, there's this place out and it's in the middle of nowhere. It's like a pizza, they do some stuff, it's like a bunch of hippies hanging out in the garden. I was like, wow, this place sounds like heaven. And I came for lunch and I ate some pizza and I had some, like, coffee and then I ate the gelato. And after I ate the gelato, I thought, this is where I want to work. because the gelato was so perfect. Everything about it was like the flavors, the texture. It was so, for me, it was like this dish. It was so simple and done so well. And it was so unexpected in the location where, you know, everything. I was just like, I want to work here. And after lunch, I went and I was like, can I talk to the chefs? And I talked to Max and Carlo. And then I came on like the next day to Trail. And I was like, I really want to work here. This is just exactly what I want to do. People doing what they love and they're being pushed to be their best. And everyone was accepted for with their own values, which I really thought, this is so special. Like, what an amazing kitchen. Like, they like my values here.
Delightfully unconventional, Norvell's glimpse into the world of Roberta's transformed her idea of what a kitchen and a restaurant could be.
Roberta's is unlike any kitchen I've ever seen in that it's, well, built inside a hallway. So you share your kitchen with the bartenders, with the servers, with the dishwashers. The kitchen is part of everything else. So you really have to learn how to work with obstacles. The kind of food that we were doing with those obstacles, it was just like unbelievable. I'd worked in Michelin-starred kitchens that had just huge stations, super clean runners, everything, and just no one would touch you until you gave them the plate. And it was too easy, almost, you know, like having these obstacles at the kitchen and having like different people running back and forth and all this craziness, it helps you be more creative and it helps you, it's more of a challenge, but it's also, it's more fun too. It's less serious. So, you know, it's like you don't take things as seriously. You can relax a bit more. You do a better job, I think.
Just as important for Norvell was the sense of belonging to the fluid and expansive family that had developed around the restaurant itself. This was a social network that fostered invention and experimentation. Staff were encouraged to establish their own projects while remaining connected to their time at Roberta's.
I've always called it the campus because of all the different departments, and you have so many people that work here and at different times. You know, some people have been here for many years, like the seniors, and then you have the freshmen, and it's really an amazing energy that you have, that you see between all these people. Like, there's so many people involved that the longer you're here, the more connected you are to all of them and the more you want to take care of everything. I think everybody here really cares about their job, and that's the difference than any other restaurant. You could just be like a very replaceable, it's just a job, right? But here, people care. They all work together, so they really want to show that it's a group effort, you know, to make it work, to make the restaurant run. And it's such a special restaurant. I never felt like I was leaving Roberta's, because when you don't really leave Roberta's, you're always still part of this family. So it's more about just taking a break. And, you know, I get to come back and do things. And now it's just, it's more of like an extended family, alumni.
In keeping with the restaurant's customary openness, the Roberta's kitchen soon played host to a creative and clandestine concept. On Thursdays, as the evening service wrapped up toward midnight, the space was turned over to an ambitious amateur cook with a taste for ramen. His name was Yuji Haraguchi.
Yuji was our fish salesman. He was selling us all of our seafood. He met Carlo through the company that he worked for, which is like a Japanese fish purveyor, and they have locations all over the U.S. And then he started to do ramen. It was a Thursday night at midnight, word of mouth. And I was like, why is this guy messing up my station right now? I'm trying to clean down. It's midnight. Like, get out of my kitchen. But then I started to try his ramen. I was like, wow, this is amazing. It's so delicious. It's so great. He's just using like bones. This is so awesome.
Haraguchi's early experiments with the Japanese noodle dish were a hit. A pop-up cafe followed soon after, located at Kinfolk, a cafe and art space in Williamsburg. Norvell admits to becoming something of a ramen fangirl, closely following Haraguchi's inventive forays into Japanese cookery. Soon afterward, Haraguchi decided to take his ramen offer to the next level.
Eventually, he came in for lunch one day, and he said, you know, Tara, things at Kinfolk are getting pretty crazy. I really want to learn how to work in a restaurant. And so we brought him on to the team here, Roberta's, and we taught him, you know, everything that it would take to run a restaurant. And we worked together very closely for about 8 months. And I learned so much from him. Having never worked in a restaurant, he was just so great. I mean, he was the best cook like I've ever worked with, because he was so keen, so thorough, very efficient, and like really cared. And I was always surprised, like, how can you do so well? He's not a trained cook at all. And the questions that he would ask me were so intriguing, like the way that he thought about food. he had clearly not been a cook because cooks don't ask a lot of questions. You know, they kind of do more like what they're told. And he was always like, why should I do this? What if I do it like that? What if I do it like this? Can I go like that? Like, try it. And we discovered a lot of new things. And that's how we cook at UG Ramen is just like, what if we do it like this? Let's try it. You know, it's so much about asking questions and trying to do things differently and not repeating the same techniques, because then, you know, anyone can repeat the same techniques, follow directions. That's great. But you have to keep creating new things. He's like, oh, what if we just do it like this and dry it out or whatever the procedure is. It's just so that we don't, you know, we don't want to waste anything. So we come up with things.
Norvell and Haraguchi's professional connection formed under the frenetic conditions of the restaurant kitchen, high on pressure and low on time. Swamped by orders one afternoon, Norvell assigned Haraguchi the task of preparing family meal, the customary dinner served to staff before the evening's work begins.
And I said, Yuji, you're making family meal today. 75 people, like, here's what you have. Make it. His face was so scared. He was terrified. He was like, oh my God. Okay, sure. Okay, I got it. And he came up with one of the best family meals. It was like a pork and octopus broth with some soup, some noodles, you know, and that was it. It was so simple. But he had just, you know, we were breaking down octopus at the time and we weren't using the head. So he put all the heads in the soup, and then we always have some pork bones from, you know, making porchetta. It was an amazing soup. And I was like, wow. I've been making family meals for a while now, several years, and a lot of them. And I take it very seriously as well. So I was so impressed by this. I was like, wow, like, let's start making family meals together.
This occurrence proved formative, revealing to both Norvell and Haraguchi their shared passion for making uncommonly delicious meals from items usually considered waste.
We've really bonded over making family meal because it's about using the ingredients that nobody else wants, or the leftovers, or whatever you have in your kitchen. It's about cooking for the people you love and respect, and it's also about using your time and making something that tastes good, but it's also, you know, not taking away from your job. After that first time, I was just like, make a soup. And that's when he started to get all of these ideas for ramen. And then when he was here, he was also making sausage. We were making sausage, and he thought, why can't I grind squid and make a squid sausage ramen? Like, all these ideas, he just kept thinking, I could make ramen like this. And when he was rolling out pasta, like, pasta is a really big inspiration for what we do now, because making shapes like ravioli and agnolotti and all these things, like, why can't that be applied to ramen? Like, no one's doing that. We should try that. We can make ramen-filled ramen. Why not, you know?
Over the course of their time at Roberta's, Norvell recognized in Haraguchi something of her own food ethics and enthusiasm for experimentation. The pair now collaborate as co-executive chefs of Okonomi, their Japanese restaurant in Williamsburg.
And that's what we do with the omakase. So it's all about just using things that you learn and applying them in different ways. But I think, you know, we really started to bond over family meal. We would get so excited about it. Oh, what did you find? Like, I would run over a tiny piece of scraps, like veg scraps, and he'd be like, oh, that's great, thank you. And just seeing his excitement over some scraps that I had saved was really awesome. Or like some corn husks, you know, whatever it was that we were trying not to throw away, he was get excited about it. And I was like, yeah, don't throw it out. Like, we would both get really happy about not throwing things away. I was like, this is funny. I'm excited, you're excited. And that's why we really bonded over that, yeah.
Norvell's eye for the inventive reuse of otherwise discarded material can be traced back to her childhood. She credits her mother with teaching her the methods of artful recovery and recycling, something she continues to draw upon through her own cooking.
I grew up with a mother from Spain, and she grew up during a very difficult time when Spain was recovering from the Civil War. And she was one of 12 children, so everything was very rationed. And, I mean, a plastic bottle was like a piece of treasure. And this is how most of the world still is. And I think the more you travel and the more you see how most people live, the more waste you see in this country and in your life. And my daily life here was just an abundance of waste. Like, every day, I just couldn't really deal with how much waste there was compared to a day in the life of someone in Spain or Mexico or anywhere else, really. So washing our grocery bags and drying them in the front lawn had a lot to do with coming into a restaurant. Like, we're just throwing all this out. I can't believe it. Not just plastic bags and plastic bottles, but food, actual, like, really nutritional, resourceful, like, food. And people are still hungry, you know, it's crazy. So I learned so much from my mom. She never threw away anything. We didn't have any heat in the winter. We only used fire. We didn't have AC in the summer. We just used fans. But this was just very natural to me. You know, it was just normal. This was my normal life.
Back in New York of 2013, Norvell and Haraguchi were running two pop-up ramen bars, located within Whole Foods Market's Bowery and Brooklyn locations. Keen to find suppliers of quality bones and other supposedly scrap material, the chefs turned to the various on-site departments for assistance. As with many forms of creative innovation and reuse, it was the market that first caught on to their ideas.
When we originally started the Whole Foods project, we went to the butcher and we asked, you know, what are you doing with all of your bones? And they said, we don't do anything with them. They get tossed. And we were just like money signs in our eyes, like, yes, cha-ching, that's our treasure. And so we sort of worked out a deal where we would just go downstairs and pick up all the bones from the butchers every morning, and so they don't have to throw it out. And we started doing that, and then they started noticing, like, wow, these guys really are coming every day for 40 pounds of bones. And then they started charging us.
Although somewhat less cost-effective, the sudden imposition of pricing didn't bother Norvell. Instead, she sees it as a positive step in converting perceptions of what was once waste into a commodity. It is this monetary value, she says, that will prompt the public to begin appreciating just how useful every part of the animal or vegetable can be.
You know, we are happy that we made it a product because we think that we should pay for the bones. They should be known as a product, and especially by the people preparing them. Because if the butchers consider the bones a product, then they take better care and they stop throwing it away. And that's where the change really begins. And when we started doing that with the butchers, then the guys at the fish department kind of noticed that we were taking all the bones, and they started bringing us up fish heads and tails and bones and from the fish. And I was like, this is great. Yeah, we'll take it. We'll take it. And we started getting, you know, mahi-mahi bones and monkfish heads and all sorts of stuff from the fish department. We're like, wow, this is really catching on. And so then I went to the produce guys. I said, you know, if you guys ever throw anything away, just don't. Just give it to us. And we started getting produce from the produce guys. So now we have this really nice chain of all of the Whole Foods staff who are just taking their own initiative, stop wasting, and giving it to us. And then we have to put a lot of love into it and make it taste good, but that's what we do. So it works out really well. And I think now there's even starting to sell more on a retail level for customers, which is what we really hope to achieve, is that actual customers come in and start buying the bones and making soups at home. That's really the idea. We want to show people how to do this stuff for themselves.
Norvell's hopes for America's future restaurant scene are many. Most significantly, though, she hopes to see chefs do away with the traditional and largely static model of the a la carte menu. According to the logic of the repetitious and unchanging offer, the same dishes feature across the months and the seasons. In this back-to-front logic, ingredients are engineered to fit abstract recipes and concepts, rather than the other way around, and all with one certain outcome: useless, senseless waste.
You know, we follow a pretty basic structure, and we have pretty much ideas of what proteins we're going to use and how we're going to use them, but it can change. Like, we can change the menu up to the last minute before the customer sits down. I think that's really the future of restaurants, and you see a lot more tasting menus and set menus. And that's where I think a lot of chefs are going, because you see, you really want to work with seasonal ingredients. You really want to work with fresh ingredients. And it's hard to have a set menu that doesn't change if you want to, you know, if your tomato tastes like shit, you don't want to serve tomatoes, right? And you have to change that. So we always start with the ingredients and then make the dishes. And I think that's where we don't really have to ever trade for time or waste. But if you have, you know, if you have to make this dish, you're going to, no matter what, you're going to have waste. And hopefully somebody will get to it, but probably not, you know. That's sort of the trade-off. But I think if, you know, if restaurants change their mindset a little bit, if they change the way that they're developing the menu, there's more room for changes and more room for improv, then you can have a lot less waste.
In July 2014, Norvell and Haraguchi will close their two pop-up Whole Foods locations, choosing to focus their energies on the diminutive and highly serene Okonomi in Williamsburg. There, from any seat in the house, they can be seen working away from behind the restaurant's wood-paneled counter, at once cheerful and meticulous. By choosing to remain open to the constant fluctuations of daily supply, Norvell accepts the opportunity to constantly test her culinary skills and personal capacity for invention. Her willingness to remain flexible and respond each day anew is motivated by her desire to shorten the distance between her ingredients, her practice, and her customers. All this in the hope that one day, waste might no longer be a dirty word. This is Elizabeth Kulas reporting for Heritage Radio Network in collaboration with Aaron Fairbanks and Jack Inslee.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.